President Bush has arrived on the last leg of his trip to Asia, in China, the nation that is at once the U.S.'s fastest-growing trading partner, the second-largest holder of U.S. dollars, and a key ally in trying to reduce the nuclear threat of North Korea. But China's rapid economic and military expansion also make it a natural potential rival for the U.S., and that can make for a complicated relationship. Ted Fishman is the author of China, Inc., How the Rise of the Next Superpower Challenges America and the World. He's a writer for the New York Times Magazine and joins us. Mr. Fishman, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
And press accounts have it at the top of President Bush's agenda is to try and persuade the Chinese to float the yuan, their currency. What would that do from the U.S. point of view?
Floating the yuan would provide relief to American industry in one key way. It would make the Chinese currency more expensive against the American dollar. And that means that goods that come in from China would be more expensive. Mm-hmm. China's low-cost manufacturing machine would not be so low-cost, and American goods would cost less in the Chinese market.
How likely is it you think the Chinese would agree to do this? What's in it for them?
I think it's quite unlikely. China has an economic agenda, which is to create a great export machine, and it's on its way to doing this, and it's doing a great job. It also has about 800 million farmers in the country who are among the lowest paid workers in the whole world. If the Chinese currency were 40% more expensive and American farm goods and the goods from Brazil and the former Soviet Union and other places that are great farm producers came in with farm products that were 40% cheaper than they are today, it would overwhelm China's agricultural population.
Former U.S. Trade Representative Charlene Barshefsky and Edward Gresser wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal not long ago that said the U.S. was by concentrating on small kind of tangible trade issues was missing what amounts to a revolution. I think they called it mistaking the foothills for the Himalayas.
Well, there are two different scenarios here for Bush's visit. One is that he takes a cue from the rest of the world's leaders that go to China and sign billion-dollar deals with the business executives in tow. You know, this is what the governors from American states do. Schwarzenegger's in China doing it now. The governor of Minnesota is going to do it next week. Or he could take this line that is more in line with his foreign policy, which is to push democracy, nonproliferation, some resolution with Taiwan, the war on terror, human rights, and so on. But if he does that, he's behind where business is. Business has already kind of come to terms with China. And the local officials, the trade association officials, this mass of people who's always finding their way to China has already made peace with the Chinese regime and doesn't mind the politics so much. They want connections that will bring deals. And when Bush describes our relationship with China as a complicated one, I think you made reference to that, you know, he's exactly right. The problem is when you go into China with this very complicated picture, you can't give the Chinese a view of what American policy is towards China, because right now it looks like we're just confused.
Mr. Fishman, what do you think about this, what seems to be an increasingly confident historical projection, that at one point or another, the U.S. and China become rivals in 100 different areas all over the globe because they're each competing for resources, they're each competing for revenue, they're each competing, in a sense, for friends and allies.
We are rivals. The question is, does that rivalry come to blows or does it just stay an economic rivalry? You know, China has ambitions for its region, just as any country would, especially any large country. Right now, for example, you know, there's only one Pacific military power in the world, and that's the United States. But the Pacific is China's geographic realm, and it's probably not a situation that China would put up with for long. It also has energy demands, and those energy demands will more likely be met in its own region than spread across the globe. And, you know, China is building a military. It's building a military that it hopes one day will be commensurate with its economic might and its position in the world.
But would the purpose of that military be to, obviously, to protect China's borders, but anticipating that they won't get a challenge on that, do they have ambitions to project it to secure resources elsewhere in the world?
You know, I can only predict, not based on the nature of the Chinese people or the nature of the Chinese political system, but on what great powers always want to do. And I'm afraid we have to conclude, based on the history of the world, is that all great powers want to project their force into their region, protect their sea lanes, get resources at prices that are favorable to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Chinese can be expected to be any different.
Ted Fishman writes for the New York Times Magazine. He's author of China, Inc., How the Rise of the Next Superpower challenges America and the world. Mr. Fishman, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.